You're listening to Around Comics, episode 256, brought to you by InStockTrades.com and Netflix. From Chicago, this is Around Comics, the comic culture podcast, where each week our revolving panel of guests talk about everything in and around the world of comic books and comics culture. And Around Comics is recorded at Dark Tower Comics and Collectibles, located at 4835 Northwestern Avenue in Chicago. If you are in the area, please drop by. Hey there, folks. Christopher Niesman here. Let's get you introduced to this all-new panel. First of all, as always, Mr. Tom Caters.
Hey, how's it going?
Wonderful, Tom.
Hi.
You look bright-eyed and bushy-tailed.
I feel refreshed and new.
You're ready to go.
Yes.
Did you just shower?
I do take a shower between episodes. An Irish shower. Just some cologne. They throw a lot of cologne on.
They call that a whore bath, Tom.
A whore's bath. take a whore's bath.
Next, returning from last week, Mr. Don Kramer. Don, how you doing?
Doing fine.
Thanks for making the trip back again for a second week in a row.
Not a problem, since you're refurbishing my gas money here, aren't you, right?
Yeah, yes, absolutely. We'll talk after the show.
Yeah. I'll validate your parking.
That's a big truck. He pulls up. He's got like this, you know, like Ford 350 or whatever that gargantuan machine that you drive around. It's like, I could tell you're a country boy driving that thing around the city.
I grew up in the country. What can I say?
There you go.
You kind of need it in the wintertime.
Okay? Yeah. Do you put the chains on the wheels, all that stuff?
I hope I never have to, but I could.
Winter is a coming. And our next guest here, a returning guest to the show, Mr. Chris Burnham.
Whoa!
It's me.
Yes. He's on.
That's your signature saying.
I did it.
Actually, we got the Burnham bell around here.
Ding.
I'll have to pull that out. Well, yeah, Chris is kind of known for coming on the show and
heavily plugging his own way.
Relentlessly pimping his wares. And so we had a listener, I think it was Chris Chavez, that sent in a bell. And he called it the Burnham bell.
Whatever.
So anytime anyone pimps their work, we ring the Burnham bell. So, all right. Well, before we jump in here, I want to remind everyone that this episode of Around Comics is brought to you by InStockTrades.com, where waiting for the trade has never been easier. InStockTrades.com is your source for all things collected on the internet, whether that be trade paperbacks, deluxe hardcovers, omnibus editions, absolute editions, essential showcases, etc. And they're all discounted at a fantastic, either a 30 to 47% off the cover price, and all orders over $50 do in fact ship for free. And right now our book club selection, Hellblazer Dangerous Habits, is discounted 47% for it's only $7.94. You can't afford not to buy that.
That's wow. Stupid not
that's
to buy that
less
trade.
Than $8.
Yeah,
slightly. You know,
the best thing to do is
by 6 cents.
Go to
my math might be off, but
go to In Stock and get a few hardcovers, a little bit of this, a little bit of that. Whenever you're like, you know, $5 short of that $50, just get Hellblazer Dangerous Habits. You're over your $50, and you get that all shipped to your house, or in my case, work for
so,
free.
Does your wife?
Your wife destroys the books if they arrive, and she catches them.
No,
first.
My wife opens the boxes and says, "How much did these cost?" So yes, Chris has everything shipped to work.
Did you fall down the stairs again, Chris? the bruises.
Oh, the bruises. Yeah,
the bruises.
Yeah.
You fell down the stairs again.
She's supposed to use a stick with padding on
another
it, so it doesn't show.
Loss.
So, yeah,
I walked into a door.
Walked into a door.
Seven times.
The last thing, music for this episode actually inspired by my buddy Vince B on 11 O'Clock Comics. He had a little Stevie Ray Vaughan outro a couple weeks ago. So all of the music in this here episode is featuring Stevie Ray Vaughan and Double Trouble. So there you go.
Excellent.
I have no response.
The blank stare.
Well, I'm aware.
You are aware
of
Stevie Ray Vaughan, right?
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
Okay. That's one of the strangest concert memories I ever have. You know, I don't know what is worse, either never having seen a musician or a band that you absolutely love, or seeing one way before you actually became interested in them. I saw the Fabulous T-Birds open up for Stevie Ray Vaughan and Double Trouble when I was like 13 years old at a state fair and had absolutely no idea of what I was witnessing. And if the 36-year-old man wants to go back into the 13-year-old's body and actually watch that again.
Yeah, well, you always want to get inside a 13-year-old, Chris. That's how you roll. That's how we're doing this episode. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah.
I got a little doom in me.
Yeah.
I got a little doom in me. All right. Well, I'll tell you what. Let's talk about some comics we've been reading. Tom, you usually start us off in that fashion. So what has been tickling the fancy of Thomas Cater's this past week?
I wanted to start with Mighty Avengers, plotted by Dan Slott, with script by Christos Gage, with art by Sean Chen.
Really?
That's interesting. Inks by Mark Morellis, colors by John Rauch, blah, blah, blah.
What else is Slott still on Amazing Spider-Man as well?
Okay. He's still working on that.
Maybe that's why he's plotting this. And those are two writers I absolutely love. Christos Gage is one of my go-to writers.
I'm going to be honest with you. I don't like the Avengers. Never liked them. Never read more than four issues of the Avengers. What? It's just... It's a thing. I just never found an Avengers book that I could ever really get into for a lot, you know, for an extended amount of time. I'm sure if I was alive back in the day, I would have liked the older stuff, but now I can't quite get into the older stuff, and I don't really like the Bendis Avengers that much. It's not my flavor, but the Dan Slott plotted Avengers is very much my flavor, and I'm loving
this big, fun superhero action.
Yes. The whole plot of this book is that there was a king of the Inhumans. The Inhumans had a king that they kicked out, who's the unnamed. Like, no one ever talks about him. But he's been hiding on Earth, and now he has decided to take over the Earth using his alpha primitive slaves.
He has this huge plan,
and some of the Mighty Avengers team, which is led by Hank Pym, have found out about it. And Quicksilver is actually kind of interesting in this, which I think is a tremendous feat to make that character interesting.
Tom is a big Flash fan, and so he has this built-in disdain for Quicksilver.
Quicksilver is just the most watered-down version of some other character. He's just he's petulant all the time, but he's sort of interesting in this. So it's, you got this huge story of that going on, but at the same time you have Hank Pym is trying to lead his version of the Avengers, and it plays up in the fact that Hank Pym is sort of like, you know, the second rate Reed Richards. He's a complete genius, but you know, as long as Reed Richards and Tony Stark are around, you know, Hank Pym's kind of the other guy.
He's the third or fourth guy that you call.
But he's still like a genius. He's a complete genius and can do all these incredible things. And at some point in the story, he's going off to explore like the universe above our universe. He runs into Eternity, and Eternity says, tells him that he's the scientist supreme. Just like there's a sorcerer supreme. He's like, you're the scientist supreme. And he goes in this big explanation about, you know, Reed Richards does things almost mechanically because he's curious, you know, like he can't control himself sometimes. And Tony Stark is all sort of practical, but you're the expression of pure scientist, you know. And Hank Pym's
at that
like,
point, does Hank go, excuse me, I need to make a couple phone calls here.
I need to call some people around. And it is very much a story making Hank Pym interesting, which I thought was pretty much the most impossible thing in the world, was to make Hank Pym an interesting character. But he is, because he's weird. He's like, he's not, he's weird in a different way, you know, like he's kind of hooking up with Jocasta, which is like a robot that he doesn't seem to.
It's a little creepy. That's kind of like his granddaughter in a way.
Based on his ex-wife, you know, like he's a weird character that they found. Slott has sort of found an angle to put him on, is that he shouldn't be treated incompetently. Like, he's not some bumbling idiot just sort of like stumbling around. He is a genius. So he's now in charge of this Avengers team. And it's also sort of the clearinghouse for all the Avengers characters that are not paid attention to. And the young Avengers have showed up in a lot of these stories. They're very prominently displayed in this.
Oh, good. I'm glad Marvel's finally doing something.
Hawkeye, dressed as Ronin, is is in this story, you know, and it's sort of everything that I wanted in an Avengers story. It's tons of characters. It's not people sitting around watching TV. There's no scene of witty banter about watching something that you can't, you know, not to say that.
It's a superhero book.
Yeah, it's more superhero-y than the Bendis Avengers has been, which has been a different flavor of superhero comic. So I've been enjoying it tremendously, and the Sean Chen art is, of course, awesome to look at.
He does
great action scenes, and it's been a lot of fun. It's the first Avengers book that I've read for more than 5 issues, and I've been like, I want to see what happens. I want to see what happens next. I'm just amazed that I'm in any way interested in Hank Pym.
You're killing me. You keep talking about this book and suggesting it. You're going to end up making me buy this book, and I've been really.
You should. It's good.
I've been trying not to, Tom.
I don't read any other Avengers book. I have no idea what's going on in the other Avengers books.
Well, that's what I was. Is this fairly self-contained? Is it easy to jump into and not worry about?
Yeah, I understand everything.
Or Dark Reign.
Yeah,
or,
I understand what's going on.
Okay, that's good.
There's obviously things like.
What made you decide to pick it up then? If you
good question.
A couple issues ago, who was the artist that was drawing it? He had done the Plastic Man back. No, it wasn't. It was the artist before that, Begovia. I forget what the guy's name is. He had done
Bogdanov. Is it? Or,
no, oh. It was an artist I was interested in, so I picked up an issue, and I hadn't picked up a bunch of books that week, so I was like flipping through. I was like, I picked this up. The art looks good, and then I read it. I was like, the story's really good, and then I've just sort of stuck with it. And there's been a couple different artists on it since then, but I've loved it. And Captain America shows up in it too. So
and it's Bucky.
Yeah, it's Bucky Captain America. Yeah, so
I do like the Bucky.
It's a really fun Avengers book featuring tons of different characters. With Slott puts a little bit of humor in there, and Christos Gage is good at bringing out some of that humor and bringing out the adventure and the action and everything's going on. It's fun.
Awesome.
You should, Chris. You should buy it. I think you
would probably like
Chris.
It, yeah.
You will love this book. I think. To be
all
honest.
Right. All right.
I think
okay.
you will love Mighty Avengers.
I'll do it. I'll do it. Mr. Burnham.
Yeah. Let's see what's the last thing that blew my mind. I don't know. Hellboy's been really good, I guess.
Yeah, Hellboy has been good.
I guess
lately.
It was 2 issues ago that there was the big reveal, and which has just reignited my Hellboy is kind of my favorite book ever.
Are we free to spoil Hellboy on the show, Tom? I mean, this is something.
This should be
like a pre-show discussion. You know,
you can spoil.
There are books that can and can't.
I don't
spoil.
Believe in that. I All do right. not believe in that. Listen, right. if you're listening to us, you don't care.
All right, we're gonna spoil some Hellboy here. So if you don't want that spoiled, then come back in a few minutes.
Yeah.
The big reveal in Hellboy, and I'll let you explain it, Chris, because it is awesome.
The big reveal is that Hellboy is he's the last living member of the bloodline of King Arthur.
Yeah, he's in the line of Eld.
Yeah, right? he's the King of England. And is he going to accept the crown of the King of England, or is he going to accept the crown of flame and become King of Hell or whatever? Holy shit, awesome.
He is the first male heir of Mordred?
Mordred,
who was King Arthur's son.
Bastard son.
So he's Hellboy is a descendant of King Arthur.
Yeah.
And so therefore the only male blood heir to be the king of England.
Can't wait. And apparently
which is awesome.
I haven't gone back and reread my Hellboy in a while, but apparently this has been being teased for years.
Well, he always goes back to England to hang out when he doesn't know what to do with his life. So it kind of ties like he always ends up in England like when he has like lost periods where he's like I don't know what to do. He goes and drinks in England and wanders around, and he's always felt most comfortable in like the English countryside, so it ties into.
It's one of my favorite Hellboy lines. What do you want? Can't you see I'm drinking with skeletons here?
You know, it all ties into that, and it's the most recent, the Wild Hunt. It's been a great cliffhanger to that series. And it's also been sort of the cool way that Hellboy works is that for a lot of books, that would have been the end of the miniseries, would have been them revealing that. But now you have two issues after that to see how Hellboy reacts to that. Like, he doesn't
Andy's got some unfinished business, you know, still.
It just adds more, more unfinished, but, he doesn't want to do any of these things. But now he's found out that it's sort of predetermined that he is... he's the king. He's the king of England. You know,
he's going to be a king of something. You know?
Yeah, it depends on. Yeah, what is he going to choose to do? You know, if he decides to defend against that the Blood Witch. You know, like which fate? Mm-hmm. You know, does he become the king of England? Does he become the king of the apocalypse? Does both happen? If he becomes the, is it all tied together? Like, he can't avoid any of the things that that have happened. It was cool because the Hellboy book sometimes, as I've said before, can be a little esoteric and like it doesn't feel traditionally like in a comic, like something's happened.
Mm-hmm. Right.
you know, it's an interesting story, but sometimes you can get to the end of it and be like, I don't quite know what happened to Hellboy. You know, like what was that?
What part of the story was further out?
What just happened? So it was cool. Like, it was a huge thing. Like, oh, that is a really big part of the story.
Yeah, there's some serious drama, and no matter who he punches out in the end of the next issue, he's not going to be able to brush himself off and be fine. Like, there's some serious shit going down.
Yeah.
And also, my favorite part of the last issue, which was 7, was the cover, which, if you're a big Hellboy fan, it calls back to the story. I guess it was the Right Hand of Doom. And there's this awesome picture of a guy holding Hellboy's severed right hand, the Right Hand of Doom, going, Anung and Rama. And there's the flaming skyline. And that skyline is reproduced very... faithfully, I guess, in the cover of the new issue. Just like, if you're a super fan, it just like, it tickles, tickles your nose hairs.
And the Duncan Fregedo art is.
Yeah, he's real good. Always,
I like Fregedo a lot.
He's a good artist.
Yeah, that's a book that I don't see you ever drawing, Don. you're not a Hellboy artist, but would you like to?
God, I'm a big fan of Hellboy. I've loved Hellboy for, since the first few issues that I read back when, when John Byrne wrote, helped Mike write the first one, even though, from what I understand, Mike pretty much kind of did it, though. But
yeah, he's kind of, I'm okay now.
I don't know. I'd love an opportunity to work on him.
I may have to get a Hellboy sketch from you at the next con.
That would be cool.
Hellboy is always one of those books that creators look at and say, I think that's the gold standard of creator-owned book, creator-owned property that has created this entire world, and it is Mignola, even though other people draw it now. But that is the, am I wrong? That's the gold standard creator-owned book.
Yeah, and it's just every, Mike Mignola's just sensibility, just like, here it goes. Like, here's the Mignolist book ever. it's just perfect for him.
And he just seems to go off in just some of the wildest directions with different stories, too. No two can be the same. He can run off with, I just remember the nail in his head and he can breathe underwater.
That was awesome. Even though, and I think it was Josh on iFanboy had mentioned this about the Wild Hunt, we get into a lot of other Hellboy stories, and it's really just off the wall, Ukrainian folklore and that kind of stuff. This is Arthurian legend. Mm-hmm. And so it's even maybe a little bit more accessible than some of the other really off the wall Hellboy stuff. And that's why this series has really kind of scratched every Hellboy fanboy, scratch or itch that you have there. Is that you know the Arthurian legend at least a little bit, and so it makes it a little bit more accessible.
Hanging knights looked really creepy too.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, all the stuff that he does is based on, different legends and different things that he's dug up. I mean, some of the most obscure things, though.
Asian folklore.
He does his digging. He does his digging for those for the supernatural folklore things.
Yeah. But, I think the internet is his friend. Either that or some weird ass libraries.
He does have some pretty esoteric books, from what I understand.
I can only guess. I can only imagine. Well, Mr. Kramer, what do you have anything that you would like to talk about?
Well, I'm a little remiss on a lot of the stories because I've kind of trying to finish JSA Cobra was I hadn't had a chance to read almost anything. Ding,
yeah.
There you go. but I did take the time really quick to read Planetary because I've been waiting for years to see the finish to that.
Number 27.
Yeah. I mean, it's been almost about 10 years since the very first one had come out. You know? And it's probably one of the most satisfying series is that, you know, with a good beginning and end, you know, that to see all the, well, most loose ends tied up, you know, we still don't know whatever happened to the fictional character that escaped into the real world and all of that, though, which I'd like to see that happen, what that's about, you know.
But, maybe we'll get 28 in another 10 years.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, they're going at it, you know, when at
Planetary minus one.
Mm-hmm. There you go. Yeah, the zero issue. They went at a good, you know, 3 issues a year pace there. But, amazing series. I actually have not read the last issue yet. I'm waiting for the Absolute Edition.
Oh, yeah.
That's
wait for it, and I still will buy the Absolute Edition.
Yeah, so. Well, they're finally going to re-release or reissue the first Absolute, which for the longest time just
it was one of the first Absolutes they came out with. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And if you wanted to drop $300 or $400 for it online, then you could. But I was just so they have announced that they're going to re-release the first Absolute and then come out with a second volume to wrap up the series.
Excellent,
which I'm excited about.
Did you enjoy 27?
Oh, I thought it was great.
I was a little worried at first, like the first third. I was like, oh, it's going to be all like techno babble.
Yeah,
all
the super science
stuff.
Yeah,
I was like, oh. And then it kicked in a little bit to the story about why they were doing what they were doing. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, it makes sense. Because there's that little moment where I'm like, oh, are they going to like explain why, like they're trying to do, you know? So it did get back to the heart of what I think Planetary was about, was that Elijah Snow.
Saving people.
You know, that was what the story was about, which I think was the strongest point for all the commentary on comic books and all like the science stuff, was that it was a story about people that wanted to make the world better.
Yeah. Well, he does his reading. I mean, Warren does. He does his reading on the science stuff that there's, and it's all theory and things that people do believe and exist that are out there, and then he adds his little science fiction twist to it and puts it in Planetary, and phenomenal stuff.
You had a great forum post regarding Warren Ellis, and you were talking about we talked about there's good Ellis, there's bad Ellis. I mean, he has his hits that he puts out, and he has some work that it's maybe not, you know, maybe not your favorite stuff, but you kind of explain what makes a good Ellis.
Well, I mean, you look at Authority or Planetary or
Transmet
or any of the Avatar like novellas, and what ties all those characters together is there's a very strong emotional core. You know, Authority for all of the widescreen, you know, like, oh, we're gonna blow shit up, it was about superheroes that wanted to make the world better. You know, Transmet's about someone who is ultimately destroyed by the fact that the world doesn't live up to what he thinks the world should be. It's a sad character, you know, he's cynical because he's been disappointed by the world. You know, Planetary is about someone who wants to save the world. You know, and so a lot of when you hear people talk about Warren Ellis, they always bring up like, oh, the technology stuff and the science stuff. And sometimes even in the stuff he writes, it can obscure that. And the stuff that's the best stuff he does, like Planetary, it's a good combination of the two. You know, there's one doesn't outstrip the other. The science doesn't.
Big idea.
Yeah. The science doesn't get in front of the reason why they're doing what they're doing. You know, they're trying to save the world. They're trying to save their friend. They're trying to save the world while they're doing it, you know.
Yeah. And torture as many people as they can on the way.
Yeah, exactly. You know, yeah. I mean, there's still something to it, like more of a heart to it. Where some of the Warren Ellis like Marvel stuff sometimes, like Thunderbolts, there isn't. It's just sort of
It was pretty cynical, I guess. Is a word like these people are all pricks.
Everyone's an asshole.
And the one guy that was good gets his spine broken.
Or like
right?
Fell, which was another one about a cop who ultimately wanted to help. You know, like there's a good heart to whatever the characters are doing, and he can put other things around it to make it more interesting. But it never loses sight of the fact of that they are heroes, even if they're a little twisted or weird. Sometimes when he goes off track is when you don't have that, you know, and it's just Thunderbolts where everyone's a dick and everyone's just, you know, and it's a little harder.
Speaking in a Mark Miller catchphrase is a little bit.
And it's a little, you can kind of see it when it happens, But Planetary 27 was awesome. Was awesome.
I just noticed you're always, when you talk about Warren Ellis, the Warren Ellis that you like, though, it's always stuff that he has created, you know?
Yeah, that's true.
Even the Authority stuff, he had written a lot of those characters and created some of those, you know? All of that is stuff that, came completely from him, whereas when he's playing in the Marvel Universe, he's using their characters. And
it seems to have a little more cynical touch.
I haven't read his Marvel work, unfortunately,
but it's okay.
Some of his Ultimate Iron Man stuff is pretty good.
Oh, I did read that. I did read the one.
That stuff was
the Extremis storyline in Iron Man is one of my favorite Iron Man stories.
There's a little bit, but he has that sneaking, a little bit of that sneaks into it. But when he's working on his own stuff, I think that's the stuff that's he's doing well. Like his, have you read any of his Avatar novellas that he's done?
Just
Frankenstein's Womb.
No, I haven't read that, and I haven't read Fell either. Since you're talking about it,
Fell, you should pick those up. I think you'd love them.
Fell is phenomenal. It's so good. It's a police, fucked up police procedural, basically.
Yeah, well, I'm looking forward to that.
That's really good.
Because
Ben Temple Smith art.
Yeah, Warren stuff is some of my favorite. You know, when he does his own thing, like I said, Planetary was something I loved, and Transmet when that was coming out, that was something I really didn't think I'd like. You know, when I started reading it, and by issue 3, it hooked me. You know,
I always thought it was funny. Like I always heard people criticize it as like a Hunter S. Thompson ripoff, but I was
that's what he based the character on, right?
Yeah, but I was like, he based on, but it's the same thing. It was always funny to me because the same criticism they had about that, I always thought people had about Hunter S. Thompson, which I thought they were off point, is that at the heart of Hunter S. Thompson, too, was somebody who was disappointed in how the world was.
Yeah, he wanted the world to be a place
better.
That,
than it was.
That he didn't have to bitch about.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I always thought it was sort of funny when I would hear, like, oh, it's just 100. And then they would, besides that, be like, oh, it's so cynical. It's like, no, the character is cynical because the world disappoints him. So it's like, you've missed the point, people, once again.
Fuckers.
Well, speaking of...
We're not done with Planetary. I want to gripe about the plot holes in number 27.
Oh, shit. All right, let's go.
Oh,
I got to say, that's one thing that, he's out to save, though, but he was willing to risk destroying everything in order to save that one man, you know.
That's true.
And he didn't know whether it was going to work or not. That's true. So there's that.
Yeah, I thought it could have used another draft. I thought there's the one time machine. They should all be popping out of the same thing. There's no within the story that's written. There's no reason for the other Elijah Snows and the Planetary teams. They shouldn't be popping out of different portals. They should all be popping out of the same one.
Picky.
I'm for real. If you're gonna spend 6 pages talking about the science of the thing, I expect you to follow through.
That's true. Well, also, the way that construct was, couldn't it have been an offshoot of any of that form of that construct that they were breaking into?
I don't buy it. I thought
Burnham is a stickler for this shit.
I mean, if you're gonna make me think really hard about how this is gonna work for 6 pages. And then you're not going to really follow through with the line of thinking. I think it's cheating.
I think it's also to the service of the fact that it looks cooler.
It does look really cool.
I think that's the weird. But I think that's always been. I think that's also a tension on a lot of the Ellis stuff is that the science can sound cool but not look cool like when you do it. So I have to go back. I'm going to go back one of these weekends when we get snowed in inevitably, and I'm going to read all 27 issues of Planetary.
Right,
sit down, just sit down and read them again, because I read this one pretty cold. You know, like
it's been a while.
Been a while since I read the last issue of Planetary.
3 years, or
yeah. And for I picked it up again. You know, like I went to the Wikipedia page to remind myself of what had happened previously, because I didn't want to dig out my issues and read them all again. But one of these days, I'm going to read all 27.
Nice,
right in a row.
And wait for that big absolute.
And I'll sell my issues on eBay or something.
There you go.
Yeah, every time I go back to reread them, I can never decide, should I read the Authority crossover and the Batman crossover?
That is a good question.
Because the Batman one is awesome.
It's really good. Yeah, I say my official opinion is don't bother with them. They're pretty good, but it fucks up the reading experience.
I could agree.
Don't try and like put them in place, because it doesn't quite work and it fucks it up. Pretty good stories on their own, but I would say, I don't know.
Is it because of the different artists for you? I mean, is that what gets you? Or?
Well, yeah, the Authority one, that's definitely what gets me. It's like Phil Jimenez, I believe, is the artist. Mm-hmm. Great artist, but he's just not the same guy as John Cassaday. And also the storytelling style is, you know, drastically different. Like Jimenez is doing the, you know, George Perez-y overlapping panel stuff, which looks cool. But the thing with Planetary is it's very... You know, it's either widescreen or it's like a half a page panel or like a third of a page panel. It's very, it's very geometrically oriented, I guess you'd say. I don't know. But and then just, you know, throwing the Jimenez issue, which does fit into the story, and they actually call back to it in a couple issues of Planetary, it just you know, really screws up the visual rhythm, I guess you'd say.
There's also something really nerdy to me about the fact that Planetary, by its very nature, means it like kind of fits into whatever you've read.
Mm-hmm.
Like they've acknowledged that it exists in its own little universe, you know, like, and it acknowledges the fact that other universes exist and that fictional universes exist. So
that's what it's all about. It touches on everything fictional. I mean,
yeah. So it's kind of fun in that fact that, like, if you're, you know, as the comic book nerdy kid inside of you can acknowledge the fact that it exists adjacent to whatever that you liked, you know, like it's this adult version, the side shoot of whatever you liked as a kid.
Yeah, here an issue on Dracula, an issue on giant dinosaurs.
The monster. That's amazing. Yeah. So I'm going to have to go back and I'm going to read it tonight when I get home.
You're going to go home.
I'm going to tell my wife, leave me alone. I'm furiously digging out of my box.
It's Axel Bronze time, baby.
I'm going into the panic room. Don't bother me.
Not to mention, it's like an artist's dream to be doing that.
Oh,
book,
man. You know?
Just beautiful stuff.
Get to do everything.
You could never get bored. Every issue. It's like, hey, I get to draw the Fantastic Four this month.
Yeah, I get to draw the Lone Ranger next month. Yeah. And then, you know. Man. Tarzan the month after that.
Just amazing.
Yeah.
This portion of Around Comics is brought to you by Netflix. Right now, you can start a free 2-week trial by going to www.netflix.com/aroundcomics. At Netflix, you'll find over 100,000 titles to choose from, including classics and new releases, as well as TV series. Plans start from as low as $4.99 per month, and you can keep each movie as long as you want with no late fees ever. Netflix has free shipping both ways, and you can expect your next selection to be delivered in about one business day. Now watch some movies and TV series over the internet for no extra charge. I use this service with my Xbox 360 and personal laptop and love it. So head over to www.netflix.com/aroundcomics and get started with your free trial today. Well, speaking of Fantastic Four, and speaking of big idea books,
it was sold out. Don't spoil it for me.
Mm-hmm. Too late.
No. Killing me. You're killing me, Burnham.
It was good.
Fantastic Four number 572 just came out a couple weeks ago, as you listen to this.
Oh, right.
It was the conclusion of a three-issue, nice little introductory three-issue arc that Jonathan Hickman and Dale Eaglesham and Paul Mounts. I can't forget Chicago and Paul Mounts.
No.
I am so hooked on Fantastic Four. For the first time since I was probably like 15 years old. Yeah, I mean, it really sounds like the Burn Era.
Jonathan Hickman's doing a good job.
Yeah, it's awesome.
And this issue really, like, he takes it. I'm not gonna spoil it
all
for
right,
you.
Don't spoil it. But does he do a good job? That's all I want to
know. He does a great job.
Yeah. All right, good.
He takes it for a turn that you kind of don't expect Reed to do. But it makes sense in the story. Oh, it's
that's my favorite comics right there. Logical but surprising.
Yeah. Well, and this won't be spoiling it because you saw the reveal at the end of the last issue was Celestials breaking into this little is it kind of like a little pocket.
It's like a pocket universe filled with Reed Richards from different dimensions. Have decided to fix everything.
Yeah,
all decided to get together. And solve everyone's problems.
And that's the name of the arc. Is solve everything. Yeah. So not spoiling too much here. Mm-hmm. Awesome battle with the Legion of Alternate Reality Reed Richards fighting Celestials.
Yeah, that sounds pretty awesome. Yeah.
And it was awesome. And Dale Eaglesham nailed it.
He even figures out a way to have a good Franklin. He writes Franklin and Valeria so that they're not fucking dead wood. Weight on that fucking book. Like
they are precocious.
Yeah, but they're awesome. It totally fits in. I
don't know, that little girl, she might be a little evil.
Valeria, she does have like a little mean twister.
There's a little doom in her.
Franklin's a little, yeah. Franklin is a little naive, and Valeria is a little manipulative.
Oh, yeah, well, she's, a little Machiavellian,
she's
maybe.
She's like as smart as Reed, right?
Yeah. But and I also think this was I've liked the art previously,
this
but I think this was the
it.
Best.
Yeah.
Art issue so far.
Well, I think, you know, because there's no inker on this book, and it's basically Paul Mounts coloring over Eaglesham's pencils, and this is the first one that looked inked.
There was less. I didn't have the same. A lot of people had anatomy issues with Frank Reed
being too muscular.
Yeah, which I was okay with. I actually had more issues with at times Johnny seemed weirdly proportioned, or people had weird proportions at times, and this was the first one where I was like, he nailed it, and I didn't have any panels where I looked at stuff and I was like, oh, like that.
I thought the art tightened up quite a bit in this issue, but you know, it's everything that a Fantastic Four book should be. It's big ideas, it's great small character moments. It hits the family stuff. I mean, this really was a Reed Richards story, but it all comes back to family. It all comes back to what is really important to Reed, and it was a great Fantastic Four story.
Yeah, it makes me. I'm really. I can't wait to read the rest of the Hickman stuff.
Yeah, first time in. Probably almost decades that I've been this excited.
Did you read the letters page at the end?
No,
because
I did not.
He had a really good description about how he got the, when he was asked to write it, and they asked him, what's your biggest criticism? He's like, my biggest criticism is it's become like a Reed plus everybody else book instead of like Reed and his family. And then like, oh, what's your first story? It's going to be a Reed story. Like, but by the end of it, you understand why
it needed to be that way.
Reed, that they told that story in that way, because it kind of explains. It is interesting because if I just told you what happened, I think you would feel like, oh, I don't quite believe that. But within the story, you completely understand why Reed does what he does.
What I like about it now is that everything from Civil War and the Skrull, whatever this and that. It's like that's done now, and I feel like he set it up. It's reestablished what the family is, and they can. I think they're free to go on and tell awesome Fantastic Four stories without being bogged down with recent Marvel continuity.
Yeah,
and I'm really looking forward to seeing what he does with it now. So yeah, I'm on.
Very cool. I'm a big Fantastic Four fan. So.
Love it. Yeah. Well, this is the last three issues. I mean, jump in. Great time. Great time to get back with the FF.
All right. That'd be well, cool. If you're going to talk about that,
yes.
I know what I'm going to talk about.
Yes.
I'm going to talk about the Dark Horse has been coming out with these one-shot books that have been like one-and-done stories. That's been the big advertisements. Like, you don't need to know anything about these. You just pick up these stories. So last week they came out with Sugar Shock, which had been something that came out on Dark Horse Presents Online, which was written by Joss Whedon with art by Fabio Moon. And this past week, this past Wednesday, they came out with the Abe Sapien one-shot, by Mike Mignola, John Arcudi, and Patrick Reynolds. And the Sugar Shock one might kind of be my favorite Joss Whedon thing
really?
That I've read so far.
I was just going to say, I'm probably more of a Fabio Moon fan than a Joss Whedon fan at this point.
It's one of the most irreverent and like loosest stories, but also, I think, sort of the funniest things that he's done, because I don't think he has to serve, like we've talked in the past,
the Buffy
he doesn't
crowd.
Have to make Wolverine say something funny. He has to make someone that he made up say something funny, which is even better. And it's a loose story about this band who ends up going to a different planet to, you know, they thought was a battle of the bands, but it's just a battle. It's like, as one of them says, I don't think he read this flyer the whole way. You know?
Like, whatever it said, bring your axe. Yeah, that's not what it meant.
And the bassist is a robot, and it's really goofy and funny, and it's not like a super tight like story. It goes off in weird directions, and there's sight gags in it. There's visual gags that you actually have to like pay attention to the art to notice the jokes that are going on. And of course the Fabio Moon art is really
awesome. Cool.
Yeah. He does such like really funny, expressive stuff and everything. All the characters are I flipped open to the page where they're having the climax is one of the members of the band is like, I'm going to end this fight. I'm going to play the saddest song ever played. And she gets off on top of the amp and she starts playing, and we see like a vignette of everything that's happening. We see like aliens in the crowd crying. One is saying like host mother with tears coming down. Aliens in space that were like shooting at them are crying. A squirrel shoves another squirrel while yelling, squirrels have no souls. You know, like just like it's not serious in any sort of way. It's just very funny. And I loved it. I just picked it up because I love the Fabio Moon art. But looking at it, it was a really fun thing to read. And the same thing for the Abe Sapien book, which is a great one-shot book about...
I love Abe Sapien
one-shots. About, like, two kids that drowned and him going to investigate a ghost haunting. And you kind of see Abe have to react to normal people and normal people react to Abe. And they're both really cool one-shot stories. The only thing I would say is, like, I wish they weren't 350 for the one-shot story, you know, that...
They're a little bit longer than a normal issue, though, yeah?
They are, but if they were normal price or maybe a little bit cheaper, I think it'd be cool, especially for the Abe Sapien, because it would be a good introduction to that character. But I loved both of them. I thought they were great stories.
Are you familiar with the Fabio Moon and Gabriel Ba brother team?
No, this is the first time I've seen any of Fabio's stuff. And
that is Fabio Moon and his brother Gabriel Ba. Mm-hmm. They live in Brazil. Are they Brazil?
It sounds good.
Brazil.
I wonder if they've ever fought Blanca.
Gabriel Ba kind of burst onto the scene in Matt Fraction's Slimline book, Casanova.
Slimline? What the fuck is wrong with you?
It's a Slimline book.
I know, but like that means anything. They've made like two of those ever.
No,
it's a comic book called Casanova. Fuck your Slimline.
We were talking about Fell, so Fell and Casanova were Slimline books.
Yeah, you can't. There's no line if it's two.
Okay, it was a line.
There's no line.
You can make a line out of two.
No, you
it's
can't.
A short line. Shut up, Burnham. But anyway,
dot here, dot there.
Tom Burnham's giving me shit while you're stepping away. Yelling at me about semantics. But I absolutely fell in love with his work in Umbrella Academy.
Yeah,
these guys are so good. And
I'm gonna pick this up before I leave.
Yeah. That's and then there's it's probably not here, but there's another book called Details, and it's a combination of different short stories that they did. They're so good. Barnum, are you going to bust my balls? You got another book you want to talk about?
I'm sure I can come up with something. I
mean, to bust my balls about?
Well, we've been talking about the Hellboy and the Abe Sapien. I think we need to bring it all back, bring it home with BPRD to 1947, which got the Fabio Moon and the Gabriel Ba and the Mike Mignola.
Oh, yeah.
Fucking great book.
Oh, it's awesome. I really like
it. Is Dysart?
Dysart's also co-writing it.
Good. Good for Josh.
The last issue really sort of tied it all together.
Yeah, and then what's going to happen in this next issue? That's the really
cool
thing.
The same as Hellboy.
Yeah.
Like, the third issue would have been the end of most, like, miniseries.
Yeah, so then you get these two extra, like, what in the fuck is going to happen in this comic book?
They get together a team in 1947 to go track down some vampires, and just shit goes to hell, and like everything gets fucked up, and no one knows what's going on. And at this point in the story, we're kind of seeing the cleanup of everything. There's one guy that survived, the one other team member that survived is going back to get him, and things kind of hit snags. And it's kind of like in the weird BPRD style of like a lot of people die, like people just die left and right. You know, no one's guaranteed to get to the next issue. In these books, and the Gabriel Ba and Fabio Moon art is
just
of course.
They perfectly complement each other. And then Fabio Moon's doing like the flashbacky alternate universe dream sequence thing, and Gabriel Ba's doing the real world stuff. And since they're twin brothers, their storytelling
sensibilities
are
insane. I'm not convinced that they're actually twin brothers. I think there's just one.
I've seen them stand next to each other.
I've seen pictures, but you never know. You know, they could have bought a stand in.
I've shook two hands right after the other. They've the same grip. different hairstyles, though.
Really?
I can't remember which one's which, but one of them's a big, shaggy, Sasquatch-looking guy, and the other was all clean-shaven.
He probably was like, I can't look like you, too. Our art already kind of has similarities. Yeah. We need to look differently, so when we meet people at conventions.
Those guys, they are
Where'd you
so
meet him
good.
At?
San Diego?
San Diego, maybe?
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, it wasn't so much of a meet as shaking their hand, going, me like art.
Me
much.
Like your art.
I like the way you draw the pictures.
Do you do the San Diego trip, Don?
When I can. You know, it's been about 2 or 3 years since the last time I've been there, though.
But, I've never been.
Really? And you call yourself a fan.
I know. I'm gonna try and change that this year. We'll see. So
I'm hoping I can go too. So yeah, we'll see what we can do. I had plans actually to go this year, but you know the work kind of cuts into that sometimes.
Yeah, I mean that's the craziest thing for you guys. As part of the job is going to conventions, but it's secondary to actually making the damn comic book. So I've never figured out how you guys find the time to what. 2, 4, 6, 8 times a year, kind of in a small time of a year, you know, go to these shows and still stay on schedule with stuff.
Why they don't stay on schedule.
That's the problem.
The ones that have to go to a number of shows, that can become a problem at times, you know. I usually kind of restrict myself to just a couple a year, you know, and unless somebody has me, you know, decides that they're willing to fly me out there or something like that, though. But
we'll fly you to Windy City every year.
It'll be a very short flight.
Yes, it will.
Hop on the back of a bird.
And a very cheap flight.
but that's one of the reasons I go, because it's close, you know, and it's only like an extra, you know, it's a day to go. And, and it's Windy City was a great convention. It was fun.
Thank you for coming.
And the one day show like that, it was actually, in all honesty, that's perfect, because you know you're not losing a whole weekend going to a convention and taking up all that, though, but you have such a great turnout there.
What's your other favorite shows around the country that you've had a chance to go to?
Chicago was a big one, though, but San Diego is always the biggest, you know. I went to one in Knoxville a few years ago. That was quite fun, you know. Had a blast there, but I haven't gone to very. I went to the MegaCon It must have been a good 6 years ago.
Down in Orlando?
Yeah. Yep. That's a really nice show. I wish I could get the time to get back down there again, because I always like going to someplace warm in the wintertime.
Yeah, I was going to say, it usually happens around spring training, so yeah. It's a perfect excuse to go down and take in a baseball game or two and go it was total chance. I was down there. My in-laws stay in Kissimmee in the wintertime, and so my wife and I, it was like the first year that we were married, we're down there over the winter, and I had no idea that MegaCon was going on that weekend, and Kissimmee is basically a suburb of Orlando, mm-hmm. and we're looking at the paper, and Marta's like, oh God. I was like, what? She's like, there's a comic book convention in Orlando this weekend. I'm like, really? Oh my God, MegaCon's this weekend. She just looked at me, she's like, you are not going. And I was like, this is a deal breaker, isn't it? She's like, yes. I'm like, all right. So.
You say deal broken.
Yeah.
Then
yeah.
You slowly walk out the door, looking at her like,
what you gonna do?
What are you gonna do?
You are obviously in your first year of marriage, Tom.
Well, listen, I do what I want to do, but it just so happens that what I want to do matches exactly what she wants.
Which is exactly what she tells you to do.
Yeah.
Exactly. All right. Well, my next book that I was nerding out over this week. It was a great week for comics.
Yeah,
it was one of those stuff. That each comic I'd pick up, oh man, that's the best thing I've read this week. And then until I read the next one, Blackest Night 4 was great, and I loved Fantastic Four. Superman Secret Origin number 2 of 6.
Is it better than the first one?
It's. Yes. It's different than the first one. It's, I would say,
it covers a different thing.
Yeah, yeah. It's equally as good. It's equally as good. It continues the story.
For me, that's not good news, friends.
You didn't like the first one?
I thought the first one was less of a story than a checklist. I thought there were. I thought the heat. I thought the heat vision was neat, but
yeah.
But every like there was. I mean, when you like a Jeff Loeb Superman comic better than a. Jeff Johns Superman comic, I think there's some shit going wrong.
I did like the second one because I think it's more of a story.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I can see, we are dealing with an origin story, so I mean you have to hit the points. Oh, this is whenever he finds out he's strong. This is when he finds out he can fly. This is when he finds out he has heat vision.
And the second one's more about him meeting up with the Legion of Superheroes for the first time, which is sort of an interesting.
John Suntress off screen is giving me the big thumbs up that this one.
John's been pleading for this for years now. is to reestablish. Okay, come on over. John.
Yeah,
come on in.
Just very quickly. Yeah. Well, like you just said, it's the Legion has not made sense for 25 years, and that's
is it falling off the thing?
No, it hasn't. It hasn't made sense for 25 years without Superman being part of it, and he's back, and it's great. It's Superboy is part of the Legion again, and also like Tom was saying, it is more of a story because more happens. They do get away from the checklist, and you're seeing things that hadn't happened before, so. I like it.
Yeah.
It was, but right. You also do
I got
get,
my $3.
You do get the Superman. You still get the Superboy complaining that his outfit looks stupid.
Oh, that was my favorite. I think that was my favorite bit with the first issue.
Like, I'm never wearing this again.
Oh, it's it opens with him saving someone from driving off of a cliff, and he pops back home, and Ma and Pa are talking, and he comes in, and they're like, "Did you make sure that no one saw you?" And he's like, "I'm gonna let anyone see me wearing this.
I'm gonna wear the underwear on the inside next time." Yeah. But the best part to me was the Legion part of because the Legion in and of itself is both a cool idea and also patently ridiculous.
Yes,
I mean the fact that there's like teenage kids in the future that are like fighting crime, but then you see them with Superboy, and if it's written right, it's kind of funny, and they actually act like kids. Like Lightning Lad in the issues, my favorite part of it, because they're like,
he's a punky. He was a punky kid.
Yeah, they're
kid,
like, Brainiac 5 is going to kill us if he finds out about it. And he's like, let's not tell him. Or, he's like, you're so smart, then you'll figure out how to solve this by the time we get back to headquarters.
Later. He's like, Brainiac 5 has a level 12 intellect. That's not a superpower. That's like that's a test score.
It's very much a showcase for the Legion of Superheroes and Superboy. And Gary Frank, I like his Superboy, where it looks... Gary looks Frank like a kid.
Well, yeah, he looks like a young Christopher Reeves.
Yeah, Gary Frank on anything is great. That guy's
really good.
I've always loved his stuff.
I love Gary Frank. My only criticism, and it's just Gary Frank's style, is that you can have a 17-year-old, like Saturn Girl is like a hot 17-year-old girl, but she still looks like she's 17 going on 60.
Because the extra lines in the face.
Yeah, it's just it's like the skin is like stretched over their skulls. It's kind of this stressed look. But that's just Gary Frank's style, and you learn to live with it and accept it.
I like it. I've never had any problem with his art, but I understand what you're talking about.
You get some more Luthor as well.
Yeah,
Lex.
Nice.
It's like we should hang out more.
Oh, yeah, that was a good, that was an interesting scene.
Yeah.
Because Clark is in the library, and he's like, we should hang out, and he just looks at him and is like, why would we do that? Just a very cruel...
Did you guys catch the Smallville where Legion was in there that Jeff had written?
That's the only episode of Smallville I've ever watched.
The
whole way through.
Because the ironic thing is they're so in character with what he writes in the book.
They are almost awesome. Exactly,
He's expanding the John's universe.
Where Lightning Lad is almost like that. You know, like the part, especially like the scene in that where Superboy comes up with like, long live the Legion, and they're all like, oh, that's awesome. And Lightning Lad's like... did you not hear me say, what's up with you? You know, Watts, W-H. Yeah,
what's up with you? What's up with
you? That's my saying.
Come on, that was good.
Yeah, so it very much fits, like, and they act like they're like 12-year-olds, you know? Like, they're 12-year-old kids, which should be sort of ridiculous, but also sort of works in a weird way when it's done
well. Properly. Yeah. You know, when anything is done well, I mean, when the writing is done good, you can, I mean, it's believable and enjoyable.
Brainiac 5's a dick.
Yeah. Yep.
Oh, man, I love a good... Ooh, Rebels is real good.
Any Brainiac acting like a dick is always...
give me that Vril Dox being a Machiavellian good guy.
Oh, it's good.
Rebels continues to just...
It's awesome. You like the new Starro?
I don't like the new Starro, but I'm...
Did you read the annual?
I didn't because I disliked the new... Now I'm just being a jerk, but it seemed like the thing that was interesting to me about Starro is he's a big starfish. And like once you turn him
you know
in...
What?
Once it's like, oh, it's a Frank Frazetta guy. To me, that's...
If you get a chance, look
that's
at
just
the,
a barbarian in space.
If you get a chance, look at the annual because it kind of... It's a good explanation of what happened because it's not quite that the Starro you knew didn't exist. Mm-hmm. It's at some point something happened. Like a very specific event happened involving like one specific alien that sort of changed everything. Because I had the same sort of concern where I was like, well, Starro was kind of cool before.
Yeah.
It was just a big starfish. And the annual sort of fixed some of my concerns about it. But otherwise, I can just tell you what happened and then you
It seems like something that I will end up buying once I get two more issues in.
Because Rebels has been, it's been pretty good.
Yeah, it's been really fun.
Good. It's sort of like if you enjoy Guardians of the Galaxy, you should read Rebels, and if you enjoy Rebels, you should really read Guardians of the Galaxy because they aren't like copies of each other, but they're sort of the mirror images.
Yeah, kind of a shared sensibility. Yeah, it's really good.
Oh yeah, it's that swashbuckling sci-fi action.
Yeah, exactly.
I love that bit in Rebels where they nuke that whole planet. To keep it from Starro infection, that is what I'm talking about in my space stuff, man.
And Brainiac 2 is just always a dick.
Yeah.
Just constantly, cannot in any way not be an ass towards everyone around him.
Were you an Alien Legion fan?
I wasn't, and it's just one of those things that I missed, and I'm... Like I bought like every other Epic comic, but Alien Legion
but
just
the
missed
awesome
me.
One.
I will believe you that it's the best thing ever. I just haven't done it yet.
It probably hasn't aged incredibly well. Don, did you read Alien Legion when it was coming out?
I gotta say I haven't. No.
Oh, so good. So good. Just it was late 80s, early 90s, more late 80s than early 90s. I think by the time Chuck Dixon had taken it over, the extreme comic book market had really kind of
a lot of people punching tables.
Yeah, and it became more of a Jugger Grimrod. yeah, exactly. What was that, Captain Atom or whatever that was? But JLA Extreme or
Extreme Justice,
Extreme
my
Justice. Sorry,
what a ridiculous name for a comic.
Yeah, Jugger Grimrod, who was a great, you know, kind of like really, really hardcore secondary character in the book, became kind of the Wolverine of the series. And but the probably the first 20-25 issues,
you mean,
of
he
Alien
became
Legend
the Timberwolf of the series,
the Lobo of the series.
yeah exactly. It's, you know what I'm talking about.
When Lobo was on Legion 90 whatever,
yes,
I thought Lobo worked so well when before he was turned like super invulnerable, when there was when he was
yeah,
another guy on the
before
team.
Before it became
really
sort of a
him.
Farce, it became sort of
pre Lobo's back. Yeah, I thought he worked great.
That was fun.
Yeah, that's I recently reread the first 20 some issues of that book. Really holds up well. It's awesome.
You know, Christian Almey drew some of that Lobo stuff.
Really?
Yeah, he was on Lobo for a little while. Hmm. So
how about that?
I was Christian was here 2 weeks ago. He said you're really hard to ink.
Yeah, I've heard that from a few inkers.
That's what he said. He said, "I told Don, yes, it's I liked working on your stuff, but yeah, you're kind of hard to ink." And he said that you had said that.
Yeah, I get like really noodly and with my rendering, and it can be tough on inkers. I know that. I mean, it's a lot of time. I've heard Wayne was complaining how much time he'd have to spend on pages.
Do you have an inker that you work with primarily?
Right now, it's with Mike Babinski, who he works.
He's done a great job.
Yeah, he works with me right there next to me in the studio, and that way I mean I've had more control over the art than I've ever had.
Really? Oh, that's cool.
Your stuff's look different too, and a little more charcoal-y, a little more.
That those are things that I always wanted to do, but when you have to pass it off to an inker.
You're doing over email and phone.
Yeah, and it's tough to get the gist of what I'm trying to do, and then they're going to do it, and sometimes I'd shade it out and do things like that.
So you work side by side with your inker?
Yeah, yeah.
That's going to be kind of hard for the inker. I would imagine that the inker would be like, you know, you wouldn't ever be able to go, oh, fuck. And you'd be like, what'd you do to it?
That's exactly what I do. No, like,
wait,
no,
why are you going for the whiteout?
Yeah. No, you know, what's really cool about, I mean, it took a little bit for him to get what I was going for, because a lot of the things I really like to play around with textures and layering with different things. And when it comes to the inking, a lot of layering, you know, and stuff I'd like to, you know, just play around with just all sorts of different mediums. And a lot of it's experimenting, you know, just when you get the opportunity to just play around and see what you can get, you know. And having him there with me, I'm allowed to experiment and do things.
That's
like
maybe
that.
Maybe that's what it was like, you know, the old bullpen days.
It's, yeah, I've been, you know, well, I was trying to get him on for a while, you know, because he lives locally, and he's inked some of my stuff years ago, and he's been doing a lot of inking for side projects and different indie books and things that he's been working on, though. And I always wanted to get him in there because I was always really happy with what he did over my pencils, and to have him there with me, I could experiment then.
That's cool. Does that
help you save time? Like, and sometimes when you're penciling for someone else and you want like a feathered sort of effect, you'd have to go in and draw every last little triangle. Can you just do a little brrrr and say, hey guy, can you feather this for me when it's turn?
With him there, yeah, it's a little easier that way, you know. And basically I'll come over with him and it's like, okay, I did this and I'd like you to do this and that. And he'll just take down the notes of that particular page and just start going to work, you know. And then after it's done, you know, I'll look at it and say, okay, well,
do it over, goddammit.
Well, there's a few times it's like, I'd like you to add this and do that. And he's like, okay. Or sometimes I just do it, you know. Mm-hmm. And just with us together like that, I've got a good sense of, you know, what I want and being able to add that finishing touch to the page before it goes off, that's
awesome.
Yeah, it's cool, you know. Cool. It's something I never
and it gives you somebody to talk to in the studio.
That's true too. Yeah. You know, you do go stir crazy otherwise, you know.
Yeah.
I used to joke around, we used to have this board artist network that we'd call up people all the time, you know. We'd be calling each other and like, Ethan, what are you doing today?
I think 30% or more of the podcast listening audience are artists and are pencilers and inkers that just need a voice in the room. Oh,
yeah. Actually, I listen to this podcast. That's one of the things to keep me from going insane during the day, or sometimes drive me insane. You know?
Yeah, we have our moments both ways, I'm sure.
I'm hooked on Forensic Files and Unsolved Mysteries, man. Those shows listen really well.
You don't have to watch them too tightly.
Channel, Discovery Channel. Yeah,
you know more about the Battle of Midway than you ever thought you would. You know?
I should get into some of that history stuff. Oh yeah, there's only so much I can learn about how to clean up a crime scene or whatever.
And audiobooks, many audiobooks.
Nice. See, those I have to pay too much attention to because I've tried those a couple times.
I complained about that earlier today. Someone was giving me an audiobook and I'm like, I can't listen to audiobooks. Like,
yeah,
I zone
out and it's like I've missed three paragraphs. It's like, gosh, shit, I wonder if anything good happened.
Well, for me, like I can't listen or do anything when I'm like creating the form. But once the form, the rough is there, I can go in and listen. I mean, it's
more the cathartic stuff.
Yeah, I can sit there and listen and draw away without really having to think too hard about everything else though. So
yeah, I'm the same way. But yeah, when I need utter silence, what the hell does a hand look like, and like how many point perspective do I need for this thing, and where's the cargo? Yeah, I need like.
When you're constructing something, but the rendering is the easy part. Yeah. So the construction, you got to kind of shut everything off and do that then.
Yeah, so. I'm sure all the way out and the puzzle work of design of the page.
And putting all that together, just the rough of it, that part you really need to focus. But after that, when it comes to all the shading and creating the face or whatever, I can do that without having to really concentrate too hard, and I can still listen to things. So, and yeah, radio, audiobooks, music will drive you. It's just whatever you can do. Documentaries, that was a big thing. I get these documentary.
There you go. That sounds pretty good.
Netflix is your friend, huh? Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Well, I tell you what. Let's wrap this one up. I want to thank Don and Chris for dropping by tonight. To find you guys on the internet, Mr. Burnham.
ChrisBurnham.com. I check my Facebook somewhat regularly, so I'm on Facebook/something or other. I don't know.
Go to Facebook.
Yeah. Look up Burnham. So
there are many Chris Burnhams out there. It's a pretty common name. So I don't know how you find the one, but you got to make sure that I'm the right one, and not that douchebag from Seattle. If you're listening, the other Chris Burnham, and I know you are.
Nice. Well, hey, I've got I'm gonna be posting some pictures of my comic book room here in the next week. Get it done, and I've got some beautiful Chris Burnham art
I need to see this object. Where do you live? Give me the address here.
I will after the recording.
Sweet. All right, I'm gonna stalk you, Niesman.
Wait, you want to come see that?
Give your address over there. Give your address over the show right now.
Yeah, you wanna come and see the comic room?
Huh? I don't care about the comic room. I want to see my thing framed.
You want to see the framed art.
Here's what I imagine will happen. It's gonna be like in Misery when the sheriff shows up, and you're gonna you're gonna hear Greg Rucka in the basement. You're like, what's going on? And then Chris shoots you in the chest. And Greg's like, finally, for 2 weeks, no one's heard me. Someone will find out. And then it's over.
That's not too bad of a way to go.
Shot by me? To keep people from finding the hogtied writer in my basement.
That's fine. Let me take a look at my picture first, and then do whatever you want with me.
I want you to write a Queen and Country story for me. Tara Chase.
You can't kill Tara.
I want you to write a one shot where Tara marries Chris Neeson.
All right, Mr. Kramer, where can we find you on the internet?
At DonKramerArt.com, or you can probably find me on MySpace or Facebook really, really easily.
All right, and in the pages of a JSA Cobra. And you also have another one shot coming out.
Correct? Yeah, the next book is a Blackest Night tie-in that I'm doing. Power of Shazam.
Blackest Night. I've heard that that is something that DC is doing. doing these days.
Yeah, it's just this little book.
This little thing that's going on.
Hopefully people will pick it up and read
it. I have a feeling
people will know about it.
I figure 100,000 or so people will probably
I've heard a couple people actually liked it. So,
I'm digging on it. I am digging on The Blackest Night, enjoying it mightily.
Yeah. It's not complicated.
All things zombie. Fun. They're all good to me. So
you've got it. Now, Tom, we can hear you twice a week or so as you run people through the history of the DC Universe and Tom versus the Flash, your podcast. I'll pop up at the end of the week on 11 o'clock comics with my buddies Vince B and David Price and Wood and John, who you heard a little while ago.
I have to say, you guys said that you don't have a script.
I find it
surprising.
Well, yeah. That sounds like a lie.
Because you have to have you got the drink roll call, and that takes up 10 minutes.
Yeah.
10 to 12 minutes because everyone goes on.
Drinking a wonderful Elliot Ness from Great Lakes Brewing right now.
You have David taking cheap shots at Marvel, and that's 10 minutes. So you have.
I have to make the cheap shots at Marvel because nobody else will on that show.
And so you got that, that's 8 minutes, and you have Wood making like dated hip hop references. Which is like another 10. Like by the end of it, you guys have there's 10 minutes of new material. Well,
there's a difference between script and recipe. Yeah, there is a recipe.
There is a recipe to the show.
Insert rambling call here.
funny boy. I'm just kidding.
You have not yet experienced the joy that is 11 o'clock comics yet, have you?
No, Don? I have not.
It's like take this add a six pack per person.
I joke.
It's
Wood's hip hop references are not dated.
No, my hip hop references are dated.
I referenced
Sugar Hill Gang this week.
As far as he's concerned, that's it. It began and ended with Sugar Hill Gang.
This newfangled Run DMC shit.
No, I said my hip hop knowledge.
Don't touch a record on a turntable.
It ends with Tougher Than Weather. That's
but
it.
If you want to hear some really solid Glenn Miller jokes, Chris is a really good person to go to.
Oh, there was this one time. No. We wanted to mention John on Word Balloon as well.
Oh, thanks.
All right. That'll do it. We'll be back again next Monday with another full-length episode. In the meantime.
And between time.
Thank you, Chris.
I think it's hilarious every time.
We'll be everywhere in
and around
comics.
Tell us where you live.
That's funny.
I live it.
Beep, 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 beep. The recipe for 11 o'clock.
I'm going to have to come up here some other times. Totally
you're welcome.
It'd be funny.
Views expressed in the interviews or by guests of the show are solely those of the individuals expressing them and may not reflect the opinions of Around Comics. Any reproduction, rebroadcast, or retransmission without the express written consent of Around Comics is strictly prohibited. All content presented in this program is the sole property of Around Comics, and this has been an Around Comics production, copyright 2009.